Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. It's Tuesday, March 10th, 2015, and we're going to be talking today about something that affects the health of everyone, and we're all exposed to it, and we're all affected by it, and that is the exposure to toxic chemicals and fragrances. And specifically, we're going to talk about being exposed to toxic chemicals and fragrances in the workplace, because you go to work and you get exposed to all these things that you may be able to control at home. But what do you do at work? What do you do about fragrances? What do you do about cigarette smokes? What do you do about cleaning products? But today we're going to talk about fragrances, how you can control your workplace, what you can do so that you can have a fragrance-free workplace. And that could apply then to all other types of toxic exposures you might have at your workplace as well. My guest today is Allison Johnson. She's the chairperson of the board of the Chemical Sensitivity Foundation. She knows all about this. And I want to say that the Chemical Sensitivity Foundation has a lot of information about chemical sensitivity and about this subject in particular. If you go to toxicfreetalkradio.com, I have put the link to the exact web page on their site, where she just has a whole list of links about relating to the subject that we're going to be talking about today. It's just a wonderful resource for this exact subject. And if you want to go to their website, it's chemicalsensitivityfoundation.org. Hi, Allison.
Hello.
You have a lot of experience. I should also say that you've produced and directed some documentaries. You've written books about chemical sensitivity. So tell us, how did you find out about chemical sensitivity, and what is your experience with it that led you then to start this foundation and getting us to today's topic of fragrance-free?
Well, it all started years ago when I was 35 years old. I suddenly started having migraine headaches. Never had them before. And I was fairly quickly able to trace them to exposure to cigarette smoke. If someone I was had organized a youth orchestra, and the committee was meeting in my kitchen in the evenings occasionally, and I found out the next morning, you know, about 12 hours later, after someone had smoked a lot in my kitchen, I would suddenly have a migraine. So I then pretty quickly saw that they were caused, most of the migraines were caused by exposure to cigarette smoke. I did find that occasionally, after I eliminated my exposure to cigarette smoke, I found that caffeine could also trigger a migraine in me. But I haven't had migraines in over 35 years. I only had them for 2 years. So I'm very much of the opinion that for a lot of people, there are very specific triggers for migraines, not those standard red wine, chocolate, et cetera, that people list, but it can be very individual for, you know, a given person. I mean, I do get, would get a headache from chocolate, but at any rate, I think that there are far too many people living with
eating. At least chocolate is worth eating.
But I think a lot of people are suffering from migraines that needn't be. I also discovered at that same time when I suddenly started having the migraines, that year I started having joint pains when I'd wake up in the morning. And, you know, it'd be hard to take my nightgown off over my head, or I'd feel my knees going down the stairs. And I was able to trace that quite quickly to the fact that our oil furnace had just gone on for the fall, and so we did change our heating system, got an electric boiler to heat the water for our radiators, and I never again had any arthritic symptoms. That's been, you know, to say over 35 years. I've gone on to a tremendous amount of hiking in the Rocky Mountains in the summer, and so I'm very glad that I learned that there could be cause and effects, and that a lot of health symptoms people have can be traced to exposures. So yes. I got into it that way, and then, you know, all three of my daughters developed chemical sensitivity at widely spaced intervals. It wasn't any common exposure But at any rate, because of that, I became very aware of what was going on in the field, and that's what led me to start writing books and doing documentaries, and then that led to organizing my foundation, which happened in 2001.
Well, I'm so glad that you do have a foundation and that you are doing the work that you're doing and communicating about it. And I love hearing your story because it really shows that people can have very specific symptoms, and everybody's chemical sensitivity is different. And I think that there's a lot of people maybe listening who have symptoms, and they think that it's only just a headache or it's only just arthritis or something like that. And then they take a drug for those things or just insomnia. In my case, well, I had a lot of different symptoms when I used to be chemically sensitive, when I used to be reacting as a chemically sensitive person, I should say. I think that if I went back to all that chemical exposure, I'd probably be chemically sensitive again. But I don't, so I'm not. But insomnia was one of my big symptoms. And just think of all the people who are taking sleeping pills or all the people who are taking drugs for headaches, and they think that it's one symptom, and they don't understand that it really can be their body's response to a chemical exposure or multiple chemical exposures. And it's so important for people to know today about these chemical exposures. So tell us about fragrance, because that's the topic of the day. We just have a few minutes before we need to go to break. But let's get started talking about this. Tell us a little bit about why fragrances are so toxic.
Well, the best work really that's being done in this field, as I'm sure you probably know, comes from Dr. Ann Steineman. And yes, she was on the board of the Chemical Sensitivity Foundation when I first founded it. She's now moved over to Australia and has a wonderful new position at the University of Melbourne in Australia that allows her to work specifically on all of these issues. And Dr. Steineman had an engineering PhD from Stanford University. While she was in the States, she was a professor at Georgia Tech, at the University of Washington, guest professor at Stanford. At any rate, she has all of the tools to study these things, and she'd done investigated the fragrance, the chemicals in fragrances, and yep, using things like, I'm sure of all the terms, but gas chromatography and mass spectrometry to analyze the chemicals given off by these fragrance products. She's just published a new article in March this month of 2015 in the journal Air Quality, Atmosphere, and Health. And in that article, she found through her research that 156 different VOCs, that's volatile organic compounds, are emitted from the 37 products that they study. The 37 different products included air fresheners, cleaning products, laundry supplies, and personal care products. So she's just done so much to give the scientific underpinnings that we need. It had always been obvious for decades that certain people were reporting that they got very sick, various reactions to fragrance products. But it was easy for the fragrance industry to just say, oh, it's just a psychological reaction, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Steineman's work puts it on a very firm scientific basis. So I think that as we move forward, we will see more and more fragrance-free workplaces. We're already seeing fragrance-free medical facilities.
We need to go to break. I will say that I do know Dr. Steineman, and we're working out a time for her to be on the show.
Great.
Yeah, and it's a little complicated because she's in Australia, and yes, I have to record her. So we're working out those details, but Dr. Steineman will be on the show talking about her new study and her old studies, which are all very interesting. But we'll be right back You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Allison Johnson, chairperson of the board of the Chemical Sensitivity Foundation. And when we come back, we'll start talking about workplace issues. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Allison Johnson. She's chairperson of the board of the Chemical Sensitivity Foundation, and they are at chemicalsensitivityfoundation.org. There's a specific page for the fragrance-free workplace references, which you can see in their menu, or you can also get that direct link on my website at toxicfreetalkradio.com. Okay, Allison, tell us about what the problems are with fragrances in the workplace, the troubles that people have with that.
Well, people who are sensitive to chemicals who have a condition that a lot of us call multiple chemical sensitivity can react to chemicals in very strong ways. For example, they may develop a migraine headache when they're exposed to a coworker's perfume. For asthmatics, it's well known that a high percentage of people with asthma react to fragrance products. In fact, in Anne Steineman's study that she did with Stanley Kress in 2009, they found that over 33% of asthmatics reported headaches, breathing difficulties, and other problems from air fresheners and deodorizers. And what I think employers need to realize is that the productivity of their employees is being reduced so greatly by exposure to fragrances, because it not only causes breathing difficulty for many people and migraine headaches, it also just can produce what people sometimes call brain fog loosely, but just people not feeling very sharp about what they're thinking. Right. Slight memory problems, things like that. People are not as efficient when they're not feeling well. And I think, too, that this affects workers in general. There are a lot of people that haven't stopped to think of what might be causing a headache or their asthma or something. And so if you reduce the number of products that cause these reactions, you're definitely going to increase the productivity of your workforce, and also it's just essential for the people who are so reactive to those fragrances, because a lot of them are just forced to drop out of the workplace, and this is really disastrous for the national economy, because they have to eventually go on Social Security supplemental income or Social Security disability. And these people, the last thing they want is to be on a government, handout. But they have no choice, you know. Otherwise, it's got to live under a bridge or something. And even the amount they get for those payments is ridiculously small. You know, the most unusual case I ever heard of was a woman in New York City. And I met her and talked to her directly about this. She actually worked for the public health department in New York City. And she'd done fairly well with getting accommodation for her sensitivity to fragrances. And because she would get very dizzy and could hardly walk when she was exposed to fragrances. And then one year they put her on a floor of a building where she had access only to restrooms that had air fresheners in them. And when she would go in one of those restrooms with air fresheners, she would practically fall down, you know, when she tried to walk back to her desk. This woman actually had to go to the extreme measure of eating or drinking nothing that day that she went to work. She would get up, not drink a drop, not eat anything, not eat or drink until she finished the work day, just so she could avoid using the restroom. Now, that's a really extreme case. And she actually got a certificate, a special award from the mayor for special service she had done as a computer expert. So we can lose some really good people in the workplace.
I agree. I think it's important for employers to understand that I mean, I remember you and I have been dealing with chemical sensitivity for 30 years. I mean, I've been writing since 1982, but I was first diagnosed in 1978. So that was about 35 years ago, too. About, we both were beginning this at the same time period. And at that time, people weren't talking as much as they are today about what's toxic. And in fact, when I wrote my first book, nobody was talking about this at all. And it was like an unknown subject. They didn't know where to put my book on the bookshelves. And I was the only person talking about it. But at that time, what we were talking about is we were saying, there's people who are chemically sensitive, therefore chemicals cause problems and health effects, and that people were asking for what seemed like special accommodations for people with MCS. What I really, really want people to understand is, and I say this over and over, but I'm going to say it over and over more and more and more, and that is, when I wrote my last book, Toxic Free, a few years ago, I went through and I researched health effects of toxic chemicals. And what I found was that every single illness can be associated to a toxic chemical exposure. It's just, MCS is only one way that chemicals damage the body, that it, with chemicals damaging the immune system. Every body system is affected by toxic chemical exposure. And so one person will get MCS, another person will get cancer, another person will be obese from endocrine disruptors. It just depends on your own individuality. And that it's not, I think that what I want to say to employers is that it's not about accommodating a few people who have visible symptoms. It's about uplifting the whole entire health of your entire workforce, which will in turn increase productivity and also reduce the amount you have to pay out on healthcare costs. Less insurance, less health insurance, healthier workforce. That's really what we're talking about here.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And speaking of reducing the cost to the business people, I'd like to recommend an article that someone pointed out to me last year. Called Fragrance in the Workplace, What Managers...
Can you hold on just a second?
Sure.
We need to go to break, and we'll hear all about it when we come back.
Great.
You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Allison Johnson, chairperson of the board of the Chemical Sensitivity Foundation, and we're talking about how to have a fragrance-free workplace, and we'll be right back. To Toxic Free Talk Radio, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Allison Johnson, chairperson of the board of the Chemical Sensitivity Foundation, and they are at chemicalsensitivityfoundation.org. And we're talking about fragrance-free workplaces. So, Allison, go on with what you were saying before the break.
I just found a few months ago a very interesting article. It's written by Christy DeVader, who is a professor at Loyola University of Maryland, and it was published in the Journal of Management and Marketing Research, and it's titled Fragrance in the Workplace, What Managers Need to Know. And she starts off in the abstract by pointing out that this situation is very parallel to the campaign against secondhand smoke, the campaign for smoke-free workplaces. And the article is quite a long article. It's full of useful information for employers. It's got one section called Costs to Employers. She says there the adverse health effects to employees cost employers billions of dollars annually. For example, in 2007, the Center for Disease Control estimated that 22.9 million people are currently diagnosed with asthma, and they say that, they quote an article saying that research by the Institute of Medicine equated fragrance to secondhand smoke in triggering asthma in adults and children, and they quote other studies that show that 72% of asthmatics have a negative physical reaction to perfumes. And then they go on to say that in 2004, migraine headaches cost American employers $24 billion in direct and indirect health care costs. And in 2007, asthmatics lost an average of 30 work days to absenteeism, et cetera. So they say in addition to absenteeism and lost productivity, they're also losses from increased costs for medical and health insurance and costs associated with lawsuits. And her article is full of very useful information, suggestions to employers about the best way to implement pregnancy-free workplaces. But basically, she's saying to them, and she finishes up with a statement quoting from the Occupational and Health and Safety Act. She says, the general duty clause of the Occupational Health and Safety Act requires employers to take every precaution reasonable in the circumstances for the protection of the worker, close quote. And she then finishes by saying, enough research demonstrates negative effects of synthetic fragrance that employers can no longer deny knowledge of what constitutes basic precautions. So she's basically saying, watch out, you're going to be liable to report to employers.
Well, you know, I think that that's an important point to make, because I think that in different areas, that like when you are in a workplace, they're supposed to provide a reasonably safe environment to work in. When you buy a house, you're supposed to, there's supposed to be a reason, or rent a house is supposed to be reasonably safe. There's all these expectations of reasonable safety. It's just common sense. And yet we have environment after environment. I mean, you can't like go grocery shopping without running into toxic chemicals. You can't go to the mall without toxic chemicals. You can't go to school without toxic chemicals. And all of these environments need to be cleaned up.
Yes, and speaking of schools, on our website for the Chemical Sensitivity Foundation, under the fragrance-free workplaces section, I list the American Lung Association. They have a sample fragrance-free school policy, and that shows how far we've come, because I've been watching the American Lung Association for years, wishing that they would get more involved in some of the chemical sensitivity issues, and all of a sudden they have. In fact, on this page, they say there are many people who experience unpleasant physical effects from scented products, and a growing number of people who suffer more severe reactions to these types of products and chemicals. This condition is known as multiple chemical sensitivities and involves people who develop an acute sensitivity to various chemicals in the environment. That shows how things are moving, because, 5 years ago, you wouldn't have even found the phrase multiple chemical sensitivity in American Lung Association website.
No, you wouldn't have. I know, because I looked.
Yes. So, as I say, I'm delighted watching all this. Oh, and by the way, that professor that wrote the journal for the Business School magazine or for a workplace magazine, she pointed out that it had taken quite a while to get the smoke-free workplace movement really off the ground and achieve anything. And she says the fragrance-free workplace movement will move far faster because of the internet, and that's absolutely true. We can all share information now, like that fragrance-free, that whole list. When I went back to look at the webpage that I put up for the fragrance-free workplaces, I was surprised. I'd forgotten how many things I had discovered that are now available.
You have a great list. It's a great list.
Yeah, and it just gives some people a place to turn. And you'll notice I use just only reputable scientific statements. I avoid everything that's on the fringe.
Yes, I did notice that. I want to say we just have a couple minutes till break. And when we come back after the break, I want us to talk about if somebody is in a heavily fragranced workplace, to give us some ideas of what you can do to change that workplace and improve that workplace. But I do want to say that as a possible alternative, many years ago when I was faced with this situation, we didn't have all these resources. And so I ended up choosing to just work at home, and it was necessary for me to create my own business because I couldn't go work in any offices. And I worked for a while in an office with an air filter. I had this big air filter, and I sat it right on my desk, and it had to blow in my face in order for me to work in the office. And just because of all the chemicals that were there anyway, plus it was in downtown San Francisco where everybody was wearing perfume. And but what the funny thing was that at break time, people would come and congregate around my desk because the air was so nice. But I decided that, you know, I wanted to take control of my own work environment. And so for all these years, I've been working at home, and I love it. And so that's always an option, is to just say you're going to just take matters into your own hands and create your own home and your own business. And but, you know, that's very different from going and getting a job to be an entrepreneur. And but it is an option. So we're going to go to break. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Allison Johnson, chairperson of the board of the Chemical Sensitivity Foundation, chemicalsensitivityfoundation.org, and we'll be right back to find out what you can do if you need to eliminate fragrance from your workplace. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Dadd. My guest today is Allison Johnson, chairperson of the board of the Chemical Sensitivity Foundation, and they're at chemicalsensitivityfoundation.org. All these things we're talking about are all on her website. So if you go to chemicalsensitivityfoundation.org, you can see there's a tab that says fragrance free, and there's links, a very good resource list. So Allison, so if somebody listening is a worker and needs to keep their job, what can they do to reduce the fragrance in their workplace?
Well, I think the best way to reduce it is to be able to convince fellow employees why it is that you're asking for this accommodation. And one thing I would suggest to people, if they visit our Chemical Sensitivity Foundation website, they will see links that you can play films, the documentaries that I've made personally. We've got an excellent hour-long one titled Multiple Chemical Sensitivity, Life-Altering Condition. It's full of information on fragrances and how these have bothered, you know, Gulf War veterans, 9/11 first responders, etc. And half the battle is convincing people that you're not just an irritating, neurotic person trying to control people. And so you need to gain their sympathy, so to speak. And it's easier to do that by having them watch a film of other people. And some people, like the Department of Labor in the state of Maine, they were going to institute a fragrance-free policy 10, 15 years ago. And they were using a short DVD I had. I've got 15-minute ones there that can be played online for free. They use that to educate employees because that's the main exposure you're going to get, is from the people around you. Even if you have succeeded in getting your own office and can have an air filter or something there, you do have a certain risk of people coming into your office to bring you reports or something. And right, sometimes you can ask for people to do that at a distance or something, but still, that becomes complicated. It's really good if you can just get people sort of on board doing it. But as I say, I've seen people, you know, be a little too confrontational about the way they approached it, and they got their fellow employees mad, which meant that the fellow employees wore extra perfume, you know, went out of their way to be mean.
Oh.
And you can't underestimate that. One of the cases in my book, Amputated Lives, I talk about a woman who was a nurse in the state nursing home for veterans in Vermont. It turned out she and several other employees became sick, nurses became sick from cleaning product fragrances and then became very sensitive to fragrances, period. They actually found out through emails that some of their fellow employees had tried to organize a special day when everyone would wear as much perfume as they could stand to try and make these people sick, and they would spray it in their bathroom, these people used, in the top of the stairway. This woman had a terrible asthma attack that night, and it happened to be the night her mother was dying in the nursing home. Her husband wanted this nurse to go to the emergency room because her breathing was so awful, and she went to the nursing home to be with her dying mother. And so that's an extreme case, but it is an example, even though those people had not been confrontational, but their fellow employees got very angry about it. So you want to be a little careful. You don't make enemies in the workplace. Yes, you can try and control your own if you have a separate office, and having an office with a window that opens can be useful. An air filter can be useful, and sometimes employers will actually pay for that. It is sort of a challenge. And as you say, occasionally people can manage to work at home. I mean, it's with all of the change now toward teleworking, I think it's a little easier for people. I know.
I think so, too.
Especially in federal government. You can probably get permission to do that. I think as far as setting up your own businesses, you got in on the ground floor. And, I mean, I run into various MCS people that think, I'll set up a business, you know, doing non-toxic, hand lotions or this and that. Part of the situation now, too, is now that the world is going kind of mainstream with some of these ideas, there are excellent big companies making very good products. So
yes.
People are no longer going to be looking for mom-and-pop operations manufacturing something in their kitchen. They're going to go, you know, like I buy my hand soap from Tom's of Maine because, I can trust them and I buy their toothpaste, et cetera. And I think in general, there are not a lot of possibilities for working out of your home. I was lucky. I taught violin and piano in my home and did freelance editing for university presses. So, I was raising my children and all. So I could avoid exposures. But a lot of people will find it difficult, I think, to work out of their home. But it's worth thinking about.
I think it's worth thinking about. Another successful thing that I did, and this wasn't in the workplace, but just being a person out in the world, like I spent 7 years being really chemically sensitive, and I just couldn't be around fragrances without having very bad reactions. But yet I was young. This is when I was in my 20s, my mid-20s, and single and dating. And so I would meet men who, they're wearing aftershave and they've washed their clothes in scented detergent and all this stuff. And I actually, I had this thing where I would just say to them, this is what's going on with me. I'd love to go on a date with you, but I can't get within 20 feet of you if you're scented. And I had this little write-up that I had one piece of paper that said, here are some unscented products that you can use. And if you'd like to go out on a date with me, this is what I need. And if somebody wasn't willing to do that, then I didn't want to date them anyway. But I had men do that because they would say, well, this makes sense to me. And in fact, when I finally got married, my husband he wasn't chemically sensitive, but he totally loved it that I wanted to live without chemicals. That made so much sense for him. And then he helped me do all those things. He helped me remodel my house in a non-toxic way and all those kinds of things. And so I think my philosophy in my work has always been not to ask people to do something, not to ask my readers or the world to do something where I'm taking something away, but rather to say, here's the toxic thing and here's the non-toxic thing. And I think that people are a lot more receptive when you're needing to approach them one-on-one to not ask them to stop doing something they're doing, but ask them to replace what they're doing with something that's healthier.
Oh, yes, I think absolutely. Sometimes you can even offer to pay for the the new product. I know people that do that. And I think, too, I think, now I'm very healthy and I move out totally all around the real world and travel and go to conferences.
I do too. You sound very healthy.
Yes.
And I don't want to interrupt you, but I just want to say to everybody who's chemically sensitive to, who's listening, here are two people who recovered to enough to be able to have normal lives.
And
I'm assuming that you live in a pretty non-toxic home, but you go out in the world, right?
Yes. No, absolutely. This last home I'm in, I built it and built it without any particle board. There's not a bit of particle board in my house. And it's all, you know, pre-finished hardwood floors and have oriental rugs. You know, nothing toxic in the house. I have a whole house water filter. But because of that, my health is better than almost everybody around me. I mean, people will say, aren't you going to get a flu shot? I say, I never get the flu. Why would I need to get a flu shot? And I can walk more. I'm just way healthier than any of my friends. I virtually can hardly remember a time where I said I couldn't do something because I was sick.
Yeah. Now, see, I want everybody to hear her say this because I think a lot of times people with MCS think that it can't be recovered from. And yet here are two vibrant women who have come through to the other side of MCS by living without toxic chemicals, which is the way everybody should live. Everybody would be healthier. It's not limited to people with MCS.
Yeah, and I just as a parenthesis, I have so much, you know, energy now that in the last 5 years I've published biographies on the poet Wallace Stevens, the writer Henry James, and I just this week am finishing a documentary about Wallace Stevens that's going to be very important, the first one in 26 years. And I've been working, you know, 8 hours a day or if not more on this for the last 7 months. So, you know, even though I'm 75, I'm still working at the top of my bent, you know, despite that latent chemical sensitivity, which I have very well under control now. So, I mean, I don't go out and think, oh, you know, this horrible fragrance here. And you don't run into as much anymore. I still would avoid being next to anyone with heavy fragrance. But
I need to interrupt you because we only have 10 seconds left. And I want to thank you so much for being on the show. This has been Allison Johnson. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Gadd. And go to toxicfreetalkradio.com to find out more about the show and more about Allison. And be well.